From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Louisiana-born Darlene Barnes found herself jobless when she moved to Seattle because her husband took a job at Microsoft. Darlene had some experience cooking as a private chef for a Dallas billionaire. But instead of turning up at a Seattle restaurant, she took a job cooking for the men of Alpha Sigma Phi, a fraternity at the University of Washington at 47th and 19th Street, just a few blocks from KUOW. Why Darlene ended up loving the job, refused to share her opinion about paddling, and found her own life experiences mirrored those of the young men's physical and emotional hunger is the subject of her memoir. It's called Hungry, What 80 Ravenous Guys Taught Me About Life, Love, and the Power of Good Food. Darlene Barnes, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
There are a lot of places a cook can end up in Seattle. Alpha Sigma Phi was not your first stop.
No, actually, I interviewed at a sorority prior to that, and it was not accepted for that job, and so ended up with the guys.
As you recount it, cooking for a fraternity or a sorority, I guess, is considered within the cooking community as beneath nursing care and daycare,
and daycare
kitchen help. So whatever made you decide to take that job?
You know, to me, I would just wanted to bring fresh home cooking into that setting, and I didn't see why, you know, why I couldn't do that. And to me, I didn't look at it as anything lower than any other sort of food job. So,
and as you recount, like a lot of the fraternities and sororities, it's just some central place and they bring it around wrapped in tin foil.
Right. The house that I started at, that was what they were doing. But a lot of it is just, they do have in-home cooks, but it's processed food, a lot of packaged and processed food. And I wanted to bring fresh, just plain fresh home cooking into that setting and didn't see any reason why I couldn't.
And you did.
And I did.
And what did your husband and your friends and people you knew, how did they react when you said, yeah, I'm cooking at a fraternity?
You know, when I would say that, I would always get a sort of blank stare and, could you repeat that? And yeah, I think people automatically have an image of, you know, frat is never used in a positive way. It's always meant to just write these people off in a very pejorative.
Sure, because we've all got Animal House kind of burned in our brains, and we see it.
And what I found was much more diverse and complex and interesting, actually.
But you didn't know that when you went there, right?
No, actually, I didn't know anything at all. I really didn't have. I grew up in London and really had no experience with fraternities. Didn't go join a sorority in college, and really went in there with no expectations at all. And I think that helped me that I didn't have these preconceived ideas.
Did the frat boys respect you?
Tremendously, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people automatically assume it's a very sexist environment, that I must have felt a lot of hostility. And actually, not at all. I felt incredibly empowered and embraced and loved by them, and found that to be one of the most empowering jobs I'd ever had.
So, now, you've got kids that are college.
Not the same, close to the same age. They're as the guys, when I started, my guys were, my own children were about the same age as the guys there now. So, yeah.
So is the relationship like you're the cool mom or the cool older sister?
Yeah, I mean, people would ask me, are you the house mom? And I said, no. I think more like the teacher, like that's mentor teacher. That's how a lot of them would describe me, and that's what I tried to be.
Well, there's a really funny video that one of the fraternity guys made, and he describes what you did, and he takes you into the kitchen that you worked in, and down into the dungeon to where you have to go to pull all the groceries upstairs. And there's clearly a lot of affection there and fun.
Oh, tremendous! Yeah, I'm still in touch with many of them who've graduated, so it's great to watch them grow up.
Yeah. If you just joined us, Darlene Barnes is telling us about her memoir about cooking for the men at the UW fraternity Alpha Sigma Phi. It's called Hungry. Maybe you are one of those formerly hungry men. And you'd like to give us a call, 206-543-5869, and tell us what that was like. It was really, well, first of all, what did you make? Were their needs very basic when it came to making good cooking? Did you have to
really? Right. I mean, I wasn't trying to bring a restaurant experience to them. I was just trying to prepare basic, good, fresh food, and they loved it. That was, yeah.
Was anything learned? I mean, from seeing you cook with fresh, good food, do you think they might have actually gotten
the
idea
I think
that
so
when
now.
They want to cook on their own, they might try
sure,
to do the
same. Sure. Now, I mean, just yesterday I got a text from one of the guys who's now living in San Francisco working, asking me about what do I do with these chicken bones? How do I make stock? So I get them texting me pictures of things that they make. And it's been great. That's been wonderful. That really has transferred to some of them, I'm sure.
And the book Hungry also has some of those recipes. What was your killer five-star, this never misses thing to cook for the fraternity guys?
I've been told the jambalaya and then the chicken tortellini soup. So just, you know, nothing, there's nothing in there that just anyone can't cook. And that's sort of my point. The very simple recipes, some of them are actually a little tongue-in-cheek, but I'm just trying to point out that you can do this. You don't need to buy this. You don't need to buy vinaigrette. You can make it.
Basic, simple, there's things that you can do.
Right, exactly.
Did you ever go too far, Darlene? Did you ever like get too fancy and go, oh, no, this was a big mistake to cook this?
Not really. I mean, I was limited somewhat by budget. So, so I was tending to cook, you know, the sort of cheaper cuts of meat and simpler things anyway. So, they were pretty open, especially. It was interesting to watch as the years went on. I found their palates to be even more and more sophisticated. So they were actually asking me for things like tongue and so forth. Yeah.
And could you afford tongue on your budget?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, not that I would want to cook that for everyone. But, I did.
Now, I'd be intimidated cooking anything for 80 people. I mean, did you
I know. And, you know, when I started, the only time I'd cooked for more than 50 people was, you know, we had days and days to plan it and prepare it. And all of a sudden, I was having to do this twice a day, every single day. And, it was a learning curve, an exhausting job. But
did you learn anything the hard way?
You know, I learned that, some things you just were not going to work. I think an early example of that was I tried to make homemade calzones because I refused to buy, you know, the processed ones. So I wanted to make homemade calzones, including the dough, everything for 80 people, and just found...
A lot of work.
Yeah. Well, not only a lot of work, there's where you put all this dough. It was just, there's a scene in the book where there's just dough on top of the fridge. It's all over, you know. It was...
Well, Hungry is subtitled not just The Power of Food, but what these ravenous guys taught you about life and love. And there's a really interesting passage towards the beginning where you say, surprisingly to you, that you had some kind of things in your life that mirrored what they were going through, even though they were 18, 19, 20, and just in college.
Right.
What do you mean by
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So, you know, I talk in the book, in the bio chapter, about how I never really fit into any kind of group, and I was looking all my life for kind of a place to belong and to fit in, and I found it, ironically, in this Ultimate Boys Club. And I found that for a lot of them, as freshmen, that's what they're joining a fraternity for. It's not for the parties. I mean, I guess it's partly for the parties, but it's part of wanting to be part of a community and a group. And so I found there was... You know, it was kind of mirrored my search for purpose and belonging to something and theirs.
And you felt maybe not like one of the guys, but sort of accepted and a part of it.
Well, you know, it's funny. The book starts, the first chapter is outsider, the last chapter is insider. And I actually found that through a series of adventures over the years, they embraced me and took me in so that in the end, I felt almost like I was one of them. And they, you know... treated me like part of that family.
Did they share their problems with you?
Oh, yeah.
And so you were able to maybe help them that way, too, besides nourishing their stomachs?
Sure. I mean, Hungry, you know, it's about a lot more than the hunger for food. Mm-hmm. And I discovered, I thought I was going in there just to cook. I thought it was very simple. I was going in there to take a job, cook fresh food, and go home, and realized that they were hungry for a lot more, and so was I, for just that sense of... being part of an accepted community.
Yeah. What kind of problems were you able to help some of these young men with? Give me an example of something they
brought
to
you. Just helping them through a lot of... I mean, when I started, it was really the economy was starting to really tank. And it was a tough time, I think, for these guys to be in school and to be facing life, not sure what was ahead. And so just helping them through that and, you know, girlfriend problems, parent problems. It was a lot different dealing with them than my own kids because they told me everything, things I didn't want to know. But
like what?
Oh.
We want to know.
Things, yeah, exactly. I and they were worried about that. I had a lot of the guys wanted to read it before they gave it to their moms, and very relieved.
Did they get approval? Did they get editorial approval?
Yeah.
Oh, you see, so you took stuff out.
I mean, my goal was not to embarrass anyone or to do a tell-all or a expose. I was really wanting to give an accurate picture of their lives and to be fair. And
so they told you everything, but did they shelter you in a way? I mean, things go on at a fraternity, maybe sometimes unsavory things down in the basement in the party room. Did they shield you from that?
I have no knowledge of anything after 5 p.m. except, you know, what I would – little clues after in the next morning. But no, yeah.
Now, you left the job when? Not that long ago.
January.
Yeah. And what made you finally decide to leave it? You know, it sounds like it was really
if you read the book, it's not just a physically draining job. It's emotionally, and especially what I went through. It's not all funny. It's mostly a funny book, but there's some tragedy in it. And just after that many years, I just needed a break. Mm-hmm. So loved those guys and loved working with them and would love to go back to working with that age group with food, but just needed a break.
Well, there's like a whole restaurant community. I know that. And is there a sort of frat sorority cook community also where you could go and talk to other people who are kind of doing what you were doing?
I did connect through my blog with some other fraternity cooks at UW. But for the most part, no, I didn't. There really isn't a community like that.
Well, I do want to just touch on something that you go through in one of your early chapters, and this is not your first experience cooking. In fact, you had kind of an extraordinary experience cooking for this billionaire in Dallas, which was a very rich storytelling chapter where they were sort of clueless about it. Was a little bit upstairs, downstairs, but they were even more clueless than those people.
Yeah, right. That was such a contrast from the experience I had at the fraternity, where I was just so forgiven and so loved and embraced. And, you know, I could make mistakes and they didn't even seem to notice at the fraternity. At the working for, I think I called them the Robertsons. I'm so afraid of saying their real name. it was just horrible. It was just a very big contrast.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you talk about, too, in the book is how you kind of had these high aspirations for what you wanted to do in a chefly way, shall say. And they were – when you say they were forgiving of you, what do you mean by that? Like, what would you do that you would feel as though you were forgiven for?
I mean, you know, you could slightly – I think there's a phrase in the book where I said you could slightly burn the sweet potatoes and tell them that it was meant to be that way, and for a little bit of, you know, necessary char, and they would be like, oh, that's cool. You know, they were just so – anything that you did was okay. Mm-hmm. It was okay.
Now, maybe as this book is out today, as people start to read it, they might go – they may not consider this before as being an interesting thing to do. And from reading what your great experiences were with it, they might think it is. So what would your advice be to someone who thinks that, you know, this actually sounds really great, what Darlene did and what she describes in this book? I might like to do that also. How would you prepare them to go work at a fraternity or a sorority?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if you can be prepared for it. I think you should be prepared for this not to just be cooking, that you're not just there to cook, that it's their home. It's a home environment, and it is a completely different work environment. They treat you like you're part of that home.
Mm-hmm. And they will be hanging out in the kitchen sometimes.
Oh,
and so
definitely,
there'll be these kind of conversations.
I mean, it's a ton of fun, really. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I have to say they're a lot of fun, and yeah.
Well, it says here, we just got an email. One of the frat boys called in and wanted to end with that, just that he called in. I'm sorry. Oh, Best Chef. We got Nick on the line. Do we have time for Nick? Okay, we're going to get Nick on the line, who apparently was someone who you cooked for.
Oh, no.
Let's put those headphones on, and we're going to hear what Nick has to say. Nick, is she telling the truth about what the experience was for cooking at your fraternity?
She definitely is. I just quickly wanted to say that when I was rushing and looking at all the different houses, literally one of the first selling points for this fraternity was the guy, the rush chair, the guy who's basically trying to sell the house to you, said, "We have the best chef in the Greek system." And I thought, oh, okay, like, maybe he's just kind of not really kind of embellishing, but...
And she lived up to that.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. It was really good.
Hey, Nick, thanks a lot for verifying the stories. I've been reading this book. Thank you so much for calling. And thank you so much, Darlene Barnes, for stopping by and telling about your experiences cooking at the Alpha Sigma Phi fraternity right here within a few blocks of our studios at the University of Washington. The book out today called Hungry, What 80 Ravenous Guys Taught Me About Life, Love, and the Power of Good Food. Good luck with it. Our program produced by David Hyde with Arwen Nix. Allie Ferguson is helping on the production end. Bernard Ouellette is the engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.